Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Anders Delvig is former president and CEO of IKEA. In 2006, he received the U.S. Foreign Policy Association's Global Social Responsibility Award. And in 2009, he earned the Oslo Business for Peace Award. Anders is a regular keynote speaker at international conferences such as GDI International Conference on Retailing, UN Global Compact Summit, IVL Swedish Environmental Research Institute, Greenpeace Annual Conference, ECR Europe, and World Retail Congress. He's author of the new book, The IKEA Edge, Building Global Growth and Social Good at the World's Most Iconic Home Store. Anders, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you.
Now, in your 10 years as CEO at IKEA, what were the most important or significant economic and business changes that you observed?
If I should pick one, it's the globalization that had a huge impact, not only on IKEA, but retail in general and business in general. Over the last 10 years, I've noticed a big trend to go international for a lot of big companies, not least American companies. When I was looking at competition back in 99, I figured I would see a lot of the big retailers go into different markets and we would see a much harsher competition, meaning we would meet these competitors in more markets than we had before. Many certainly tried. We've seen Walmart trying to enter Europe, China, we've seen Home Depot likewise. We've seen some big retailers in Europe like Tesco, Carrefour move into emerging markets. Tesco has just come to the US trying to make it here. So there's been a big trend in this direction, but it has been a bit of a failure.
How so?
Over the last few years only, we've seen Carrefour stop their operations in Japan, in Thailand, in Indonesia, a lot of countries out there. We've seen Home Depot leave China. We've seen Walmart leave Germany. So many people have contracted to their home market. Many of them have underestimated what it takes to go global.
Right.
There are a number of important things you need to master if you go global. And that's the reason why IKEA has been successful. IKEA today is in about 26 markets.
So what do we need to be successful?
First of all, you have to have a unique prospect. When you enter a new market, you have to come with something that doesn't exist in this market. So you add something new. Some have underestimated this, especially when Western retailers move from, let's say, Europe to the US or vice versa. One reason European retailers have failed in the US and US retailers in Europe is there isn't enough uniqueness in the offer. So if Walmart comes to Germany, you are selling baked beans and they already exist in Germany.
Sure.
When a Western retailer goes into an emerging market, you have some chance of being unique because what you usually find in these markets is very cheap, low quality at the bottom end, and then you have the extremely expensive stuff, high-end brands
right.
being imported. So the whole middle market is available. Then another aspect that is often underestimated is the values aspect. You bring your value set from your company to this new market, underestimating the differences. Therefore, you encounter some problems in getting accepted both by the customers and the employees. A third one is that most retailers would like to change their offer as little as possible when they move from one market to the next because of scale advantages. You want to have a small range, you want to have an efficient supply chain.
Right.
Hopefully, the customer will accept your range as it is wherever you go. This would work in a European setting when you move from Germany to France or something like that. But when you move into emerging markets, many companies, including IKEA, have been surprised and have not researched enough how they need to adapt their offer to the new market.
Right.
When you go there, you start up, you notice it doesn't work, and you have to start to adapt. This process can take some time. If you have institutional ownership with quarterly earnings and short-term profit demands, there isn't the patience to stick it out for a number of years before you become profitable.
Yeah.
In the IKEA case, it's a foundation, but there's a strong owner behind it, always having a very long-term perspective of everything we've done since 65 years back.
Right.
We can move into a country and say, it doesn't matter if we're unprofitable for 10 years, because to stick it out for a number of years, for us, it's the next 50, 60 years.
Right. And so many companies just don't have that horizon.
No, and it is a competitive disadvantage. So if you are privately held, or you have a strong owner with at least a majority, that's a big advantage.
Absolutely.
And the last reason is in order to go into emerging markets, you need to have a very profitable home base. There has to be something that finances this for a number of years.
Right.
Especially when we move into a contraction of the economy like we have now, many of these retailers find it hard in their home market. So they're starting to lose money or their profits are going down.
Right.
The base is eroding. The patience from the shareholder is being reduced. Uh-huh. A logical consequence of that is you start to reduce global expansion.
Exactly.
You pull back. You close a few countries. It's the quick way of reducing your cost base.
Mm-hmm. Anders, what kept you up at night as CEO of IKEA?
If I would be in the telecom business, what would keep me up probably is the level of innovation and how it all changes very fast and how can we be part of that and not be sidestepped.
Right.
IKEA is in a very stable business. A chair has been a chair since 300 or 400 years, and most likely
exactly.
People will still need furniture.
Well, that's true.
So it doesn't really keep me awake, that part.
Mm-hmm.
Competition doesn't keep me awake either, because I've seen very little innovation coming out of the home furnishing retail sector. Most of the innovation that has happened in IKEA. Mm-hmm. We have been the driver of it.
Mm-hmm.
IKEA is today a market leader in almost all markets. And the threshold or the barrier of entry or expansion for anyone else has increased. And it is very difficult to compete with IKEA today. What does keep me awake is the biggest threat to IKEA is IKEA itself. Mm. The prospect of growth is the killer for us.
So why is that a problem?
First of all, we're still in the first generation of owners, and we haven't seen the transition to the next. What the effects of that will be in terms of dilution or not of the vision and values and how that makes the company tick is at least a potential. I'm not saying it will be, but it is a potential problem. And then you have mm-hmm. the threat of complacency. When the company is doing well, as it has been for a very long time, you can feel it creeping in.
Mm-hmm.
You're not on the edge.
Yeah.
You're doing very well. It's a constant battle to create a feeling of energy in the organization. Another big one is just the size of the company creates bureaucracy. There's 125,000 coworkers today. 10 years ago, we were 7,000. We've tripled sales.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big company. It's a different company. And when this continues, it's inevitable that you get bureaucracy. Even if you fight it every day, do everything you can, it just happens.
Ooh.
Management is more distanced from the customers. Inevitably, this will slow the company down, make it less competitive.
So how can you bypass these problems?
You can't say, I'll stop growing. That's the engine and motivation of all people. One thing maybe it's for the new management and owners to contemplate. In order to forego the situation where we become too big and uncompetitive, could be to break up the company.
Hmm. Right.
I haven't seen a company yet that has done that from a position of strength. Usually if it happens, it's when you're mm-hmm. down and out.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point, because we did an interview with Charles Handy, the social, cultural, business thinker.
Great guy.
And one of his arguments was this concept of the S-curve.
Yeah.
When you should jump, whether you should personally jump to a new job or when a company should jump to a new offering, or using the IKEA example, when they should contemplate even breaking it up.
Mm.
He argues that you should do that just at the moment when everything is going great, when you have all the positive energy in the world, when you have, in essence, upward momentum,
yeah.
and you're in a better position to weather what mm-hmm. happens because mm-hmm. of those changes. Now, human nature being what it is, you don't break up a company or contemplate a job switch these days unless things are really, really bad.
I agree.
And ironically, Handy would say, not so ironically, mm-hmm. that's the worst possible time to do it, because your energy level and your capability is so low.
I'm not surprised he's saying that. I think he's a great thinker. I totally agree.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a brave step to take. I don't think IKEA will do it. It takes guts to do that.
This is an interesting question I have for you. How much of corporate culture is rooted in national culture?
In the IKEA case, there isn't any adaptation to local culture. And the reason that is possible is the values of the company are so broad.
Right.
There's basic needs of the human beings like recognition, respect, honesty, moral and ethics. That would apply to any culture. If your values were more specific,
mm-hmm.
that could be a problem in some countries.
Sure.
The values of IKEA are the values of the founder. And the founder is Swedish, so there is probably Swedishness in the value system. But being global for so many years, we have managers that are mm-hmm. Germans, English people, American people, who are all very good bearers of the IKEA values. But the challenge you have is when you move to countries with cultures that are very different, like China, right. Japan, yeah. to give you a couple of examples, you have to be aware of that.
Right. But how do you do that?
When you recruit people mm-hmm. for management and try to coach them into high positions in the company, you have to be prepared to spend much more time with these people so that they understand what your company is about, because they are further away from it when they start off. Often, we just expect them to adapt as quickly as anyone else. And then we end up not promoting them, having less managers from these cultures. Mm-hmm. And that is not only a failure. I think it's crucial that we bring up strong managers mm-hmm. from these cultures if we want to become a big company in those countries.
Social responsibility is a relatively new concept for many large companies. Do you have any thoughts that are related to social responsibility from a corporate standpoint?
Yes. Social corporate responsibility is not in contradiction with being profitable. A lot of people think that social responsibility adds costs and therefore it's less profitable and it doesn't add to shareholder value. I think quite the contrary.
Why is that?
A vision with a social ambition is at the core of IKEA. Mm-hmm. The vision, as formulated by the founder in 1976, is that IKEA should create a better everyday life for the majority of people. And we do that through the offering of good furniture at low prices. And that's integral in everything we do. It's a vision that filters into all the strategies and the behavior of the company. Social responsibility is not about an environmental agenda only or a contribution or charity. It is the company.
Right.
We are about making things better for people in the home furnishing business to start with, mm-hmm. but that goes into many other areas as well. And this translates into real strategy. One short example of that is how the vision translates into the financial model of the company. IKEA is totally revenue-driven, top-line driven. It's all about sales. So we have to have low prices. Contrary to most other retailers, the margin is not the issue at IKEA. Like all companies, we try to reduce the purchase prices of the products. But when we get a good purchase price on the product, mm-hmm. instead of giving it to the shareholders by increasing our margins and letting it fall to the bottom line, we pass it on to the customers in lower prices.
Right.
The margins are fairly low compared to many. But through the low prices, we generate high sales volumes and with a strict cost control that delivers the bottom line price. Contrary to other retailers then, who invest in premium brands, they invest in marketing to enhance the value of the product through branding, and then they increase the prices, take up the margins, and then they let that fall to the bottom line. So they like to increase the prices of the products in various ways. We try to decrease the prices and drive the volumes and a low cost base. And it works. Mm-hmm. It's been incredibly profitable. And in my 10-year tenure at the top, we reduced sales prices 20%. On average.
That's amazing.
And we make double-digit profits and have consistent for the last 10 years never been below 12% profitability. So it's a different model. Mm-hmm. It goes back to the vision of delivering low prices and good furniture to the customers, the ones who don't have the financial means.
Anders, in the book, you also talk a lot about the entrepreneurial management style. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
I've always felt that IKEA has been better at innovating than execution. Where we need to improve is execution, basically. We have more ideas than we manage to translate into products or operational skills in the company. And that goes back to the entrepreneurial style of the company that's been around since the beginning. We managed to maintain it up until now. The reason is the values, because the value system is such that we give people a lot of responsibility to try out things, to make mistakes. You're not punished if you make mistakes. So people don't fear trying new things out, even crazy things. That's encouraged. Mm-hmm. It's so grounded in the philosophy and the values of the companies that people are not afraid to do these things and take responsibility. Mm-hmm. This makes it possible to generate a lot of new ideas. Some of them we take in and try to translate into something that can be shared by the whole mm-hmm. company. And some, of course, for whatever reason, doesn't work.
We've been speaking to Anders Dalvig, author of the new book, The IKEA Edge, Building Global Growth and Social Good at the World's Most Iconic Home Store. Anders, thanks for being with us on Edgewise today.
Thank you very much.
The American Management Association has an international presence, adding value to your organization by involving you in a global community of peers and practitioners via one of the world's most sophisticated knowledge exchange networks. Today, AMA's global reach extends from Management Center Europe in Brussels to Management Center de Mexico in Mexico City, from the Canadian Management Center in Toronto to AMA Japan in Tokyo. And since 1995, AMA has served the Chinese market through the Asia-Pacific Management Institute in Shanghai. We'd love to get your feedback on today's program. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.